Resonant Truth presents Natural Time, Mayan Astrology for a Modern Age. I'm Lisa Starr. I was raised in the faith of the Mayan sacred calendars. These ancient cycles have been resurrected for a modern audience and called Natural Time, in part because our year of uneven month lengths is, by comparison, really unnatural. I am not here to lead any kind of revolt against the Gregorian calendar, but I do want to bring the Mayan alternative to light, and I want you to know about Mayan astrology, where the passage of time and your birthday within it has deep mystical and magical significance according to indigenous spirituality. I am passionate, I am transparent, and I am emotionally available, if not volatile. And that's because I'm a blue overtone storm. You can find out what you are at resonanttruth.com.
Today on the Zolk'in count is called Blue Overtone Storm, and it is the fifth day of the Blue Eagle Wave Spell. And it is the middle of the third week in the west of the magnetic moon, and I guess that makes it day 16. I'm a little off because this is an irregular podcast in terms of my normal aspirations to hit it on Sundays and Wednesdays. This is going up on a Tuesday, and it's an extra, it's a bonus podcast, but I will be out of the office from the Gregorian day, August 15th to the 26th, at least. I'll try to get right back on it when I come back home on the 26th. And that'll be essentially from the middle of the Blue Eagle Wave Spell into the middle of the Yellow Star Wave Spell. So I really want to prep people for paying attention to these last two wave spells that complete the Zolk'in. And that's my intention of kind of getting you revved up so you can take flight in this Blue Eagle time and start to ascend truly beyond the atmosphere into the place where the original Maya live in their, you know, heavenly realm after their culture was decimated by colonization and they sort of evaporated from the face of the earth. The assumption is that there is sort of a localized heavenly realm, an ether existence for all those souls, and that they are who we anchor to when we follow the modernized Arguellian version of their calendar. And let me speak to that for a minute, because I'm like a completely logical New Age person. Like, I guess I'm New Age in that I believe in these, I don't know, alternate religious experiences and ancient indigenous perceptions, and that qualifies me, you know. I can't distinguish myself from some of the other movements that have lived in the New Age bookstores for decades. Like, okay, I'm there, I qualify. But I just tend to have an approach that isn't, I don't know what to say about it. It makes perfect sense to me that when any of us die, any of us earthlings die, that we don't go to a heaven that, you know, has winged creatures and gates, and that we don't sit on clouds, but that from the near-death experience I had in my 30s, you know, you just sort of vanish physically, but continue to have a soul expression or a spark that, you know, goes out into. And then the imaginal part of me, the person's just sort of pretending that there's a spot that one goes to, just pictures it in outer space, but not way out, not in a galaxy far, far away, near here, something we could see with our eyes. You know, that's just my imaginal creative solution to what the afterlife is. and that it is a place where you float. They call it liminal space. And then you might come back. I mean, that you would come back and incarnate again. I guess I believe in that. I believe in the science of reincarnation. And it just makes sense to me. So it's not that I was ever convinced. It's just a response that I have. So that's how I use this description of the Maya when they had to face deep cultural biological struggle. You know, I'm assuming that it was absolutely the influence of things like smallpox that came with the explorers and violence that came with the imperial infiltration, that when there was a massive exodus of their population, you know, sort of plague, that they still stuck together. They sort of had an incomplete karma. And at the same time, they had very fixed ideas of what their heaven was. You know, as Christians do, I think, have a fixed idea of this afterlife that is full of angels and has gates. Like the Maya had their version of that. And I feel like that intentionality actually works, and that they ended up somewhere collectively. And that becomes this occult anchor for us when we are here and experiencing synchronicity following their teachings, their Zolk'in calendar, their wave spells, as we term them in the anglicized language, that we can connect to them like elders, like people on the other side of the world bridge, souls that support that. I don't think it's like a full scale, like we're carrying on their message, you know, because I don't know that that's what it feels like for me. Instead, it feels like we're just lucky and privileged enough to have fallen into something that was very scientific and accurate for them. You know, it seems woo-woo and counter-scientific to people that think the Gregorian calendar is the absolute and anything that is different is just weird and eccentric. But for the Maya, it was just a much more scientific way of tracking time. And so it's, to me, it's not so much that, you know, we get to be rewarded by Mayan oversight because we are still hanging on to their calendar teachings and keeping them extant on Earth. Like, I just don't feel that attachment from their kind of collective persona. But instead, I feel, you know, like when you have a really cool elder in your life that, you know, sees that you understand the magic of their older way of life, that you're not a complete modernist, you know, a favored grandparent or a neighbor, but somebody who, you know, shows you how to make apple dolls by letting a peeled apple dry out till it's wrinkly and then you make it a face of a doll. Like, did you ever do that? I did. So that feels like, oh, that's an old tradition that was passed on by someone old into a modern age where no one does that anymore. And then that's how I view what's going on in the relationship between me and the soul life of the deceased Mayan culture. Just like, oh, well, if you like old things and you like this, then that's just charming and you'll be charmed. You'll be caught in the charm of something ancient and you'll be relieved of the burden, the void of a completely modernized life. So I don't know where I started on that tangent, but that's what I'm talking about today. I'm talking about how we can recognize that when we finish the Zolk'in and we are in the Yellow Star wave spell, that we are rising to the place where these Maya live in a certain kind of actuality, that's where we arrive at the end of the Zolk'in. The 20th wave spell is Yellow Star, that we meet them where they are, of course, in a unconscious way, in an imaginal way, but that's when the Maya followed the Zolk'in. You know, they were carving out a relationship to the origin of their beliefs of divinity out in the stars. Their devotion to the stars and the movements of the stars and the splendor of the stars was magnificent and unending. And so they were able to go there when it was time to go, or, you know, they created a destiny, you know, with a psychic anticipation that they were going to levitate off this earth. So their whole picture of their mythology of a spiritual world was oriented, you know, off the earth, where they were going to have this exodus, this diaspora right off the earth based on the impact of colonization. In any case, Yellow Star was their ultimate arrival point in their calendar, and it can be ours. And, you know, I've been thinking a lot over the last few moons and talking about it here from time to time, or maybe it's been, you know, endless in your perception. And it's been pretty endless inside my mind about the existential experience, either of my turning 52, which is an absolute in terms of a reckoning for any of us, and my, you know, moving to a place where I felt like I came out of denial about the ecology of our planet being, you know, in an absolutely mortal coil. And so the existential crisis of me adapting to the reality of climate crisis has made it impossible for me to not feel that we're so much closer to a similar exodus as the Maya were forced to take. And so I think the Yellow Star wave spell that we're reaching towards here to conclude this Sulcan turn is both to calm and assuage any of us who are like, what the fuck is going to happen when all the climate denial means that we're just going to have more and more suffering here as not just humans, but all animal life. You know, we just discard all the animals that will die and are affected by human choices to deny climate crisis. So anyway, all this elevation of souls through death, like, it's helpful to remember, and please don't think of me as a preacher here, but this is how I've adapted, and it is my belief system. It's not like I'm announcing something absolute or that you've never thought of yourself, but death is not the end, right? So that's a basic tenet of the teachings of an indigenous spiritual revelation, is just a lot less attachment to staying alive because death was more normalized and unavoidable. And so if death is not the end, then we become stars. We become stars when we die. And stars are magnificent. And when, I guess, you don't have electricity and therefore television and the internet, stars are like gemstones that also move and have this incredible operatic presentation and a mythology for you. You know, you behold them in the stories that they enact. So to enter the stars is to enter something godlike. And that's the whole basis of the way the Sulcan plays out. There is a story in the 20 days of the day signs from red dragon to yellow sun that is a very actualized mythology that is also about being born into the uterus of our mother and then ultimately returning to light in death, joining yellow sun, joining creator at its source. Like, that is what happens when you walk from red dragon to white wind to blue night, etc., and you complete at red earth and white mirror and blue storm and yellow sun. Like, it is a story that you can see seamlessly. And if you want more information about it, I do tell that story in my book, Natural Time. And then it's a little different when you trek through the 20 wave spells, because in the Sulcan, the wave spells of 13 days, while representing each of the 20 tribes, they can't be in the same order. That would be mathematically impossible. We still start at red dragon, however, but our completion is at yellow star. And of course, yellow star and yellow sun are you know, like they have a micro macro cosmic relationship. The sun is a star, but yellow star is, you know, either a different star or the totality of the stars. And, you know, there is a different story that you can feel. You know, I think it's a more personal journey. It's not the grand mythology, the Maya. You can look at it as we start a new Zolk'in and be like, what is it to go from red dragon to white wizard to blue hand to yellow sun? Those are the first four wave spells. You know, what is it to finish then in red moon and white wind and blue eagle and yellow star? For me, you know, just very quickly off the top of my head, like, okay, well, to finish these last four wave spells that we've just been through, I describe really deeply when I'm in it that red moon is so ultimately feminine, so fluid, so malleable in the most powerful way, yielding, also emotional, you know, so those are feminine archetypal aspects. White wind is invisible and absent, powerful. It's what moves the physical world, but in a way that, you know, can't be pinned down, and that there's so much strong masculine, pure masculine energy that we reckon with. You know, I'm speaking from a woman's body, identifying as a woman. Like, that masculine absence is one of the great struggles. Like, where the fuck is he, whoever he is? Father, partner, brother, your own child. Like, what happened? Why are they unreachable? Well, because they are absent, the way the wind, you know, can't be placed or pinned down, and that's their power. And in their absence, they're actually creating protection. So we go through this kind of like stark feminine, stark masculine, like the penultimate experience of being human and these feminine and masculine aspects. And then Blue Eagle, like I said, it's the journey off the planet, the winged journey, lifting off, being as close to God in our bodies as we can by occupying this animal aspect that is the top of our head, the brain, the way that our brain functions as a supreme being over the rest of our body, you know, giving directions, giving guidance to our limbs. And that Blue Eagle becomes this last animal stage before we lift off into ether. Because stars are just burning energy. So that is what ether is. I love the word ether to describe the afterlife, because I don't know, it's like a solidity, but the solidity is gaseous. And, you know, I always have to backtrack and just be like, again, this is all like it's fantastical, because yellow star, when the Maya described it, was referencing Venus, you know, the most beautiful star, the brightest star, the one that moves the most, so you can have a relationship with it because it's doing a dance in the sky. It's not stationary to the eye. It has complete phases of brightness, and so it has a personality, and that's been true of all the original spiritualities that we still track. You know, we can call ancient Greek and Roman mythology like a storytelling about gods and goddesses, but they were speaking about the stars. So Venus is a planet. So I say it's like yellow star is about, you know, the gaseous ether element of outer space, but it's a conundrum because some of them are actually planetary bodies. I don't know, I just have to throw that in because that's science. So here I am. Remember, this is an extra podcast. I'm planning to have another sort of more regular one tomorrow. Part of the reason is because I'm doing reverse jet lag, and I am awakening in the middle of the night to imitate Swedish time, and there's not a lot to do when it's dark when you wake except talk. So thanks for listening. But this is what you can anticipate, and this is what I wish you would. And then the other piece about today in particular is that it's blue overtone storm, and that's my Mayan birthday. It's 260 days since I turned 52. So for me, it's very reflective, you know, like, well, what have I birthed since I was in my ultimate rebirth of my lifetime? And again, it sounds like a me discussion, but you have this yourself. You have it coming up in a decade. You had it a decade ago. You're right there. Magically, you've been drawn to Natural Time, the podcast, and Lisa Starr, the person, because you are, you know, in a parallel experience of coming right up on being 52. Like, that would be important for you to not miss out on this opportunity to not just understand yourself and the resonance of your, you know, lifetime's karma, but also your relationship to the original Maya as it comes through your body and being when you go through this portal. So since I've had, you know, 22 years of interest and dedication, it's been super powerful to go through that portal myself. And it's been really painful, and painful in a way that I wouldn't have anticipated. You know, right before I turned 52, let's say in the 260 days leading up to 52, which would have imitated me being in utero originally in the time frame, I was given this very obvious opportunity to go back home to where I'm from, and I took it. I didn't hesitate at all with that decision, because I knew that when you are, you know, in this 52-year cusp, you will see grand changes in your life. And so it was effortless for me to be like, yeah, I'm going to leave. I'm leaving Santa Barbara. I'm going back to Northern California. But that particular journey, you know, has been really frenzied and difficult for me in a way that I didn't anticipate, because it was so easy to decide to do it. And then it was, on a human level, just so demanding to, you know, make the actual relocation happen. And I think at 260 days after that whole process, I actually didn't move on my Mayan birthday, but about 10 to 13 days afterwards, it was November 23rd on the Gregorian when I had my Mayan birthday, and it was December 6th when I arrived in my new place. But, you know, between those two dates was just a gnarly experience of packing a moving truck and exiting another home. And the actual move was horrible, driving the truck 400 miles. And then the arrival was exhilarating, but the work here has been my own Mayan odyssey in terms of the actualization of my personal Mayan pyramid. Just being my own slave, carrying my own blocks without horsepower, you know, that's a pretty dramatic representation of my remodel, but it's been painful and excruciating to kind of live my truth of self-sufficiency and being kind of an original pioneer in my spirit to face the task of turning this haunted house into a home. And after 260 days, you know, it's not complete in any sense of the word, because finished details take twice or five times as long as your first gestures of artistry, but it's completely habitable, and there's a lot of beauty, you know, and resurrection of home in this house. And I'm about to go on a vacation that is both earned and was planned to be kind of like the stopgap where I would change how hard I worked into something more sustainable. So all of that has been really organic. 260 days for any way we consider it is always a gestation. So leading up to your Mayan birthday is the most significant picture of gestation being actualized in your life. And then any 260 days between your Mayan birthdays is another kind of portrayal of gestation. And you can look back to where you were the last time it was your Mayan birthday and see what has been achieved. I have a bit of a story, which is that my dream, when I actually turned 52 on Blue Overtone Storm, was so specific, and it involved my two parents and this man that I had been kind of in an unrequited love with. Couldn't believe he showed up in that dream. Still don't really understand what it means, because he never shows up in real life in the same way. And in fact, we now live 400 miles apart, so it would be untenable. But the fact that he was there on my biggest Mayan birthday of my life, besides my birth, was charming. When I dreamed this morning, just now before waking, I guess I'm not going to talk about the subject matter because it's sort of one of my pieces of privacy, but it was massive. It was massive in terms of, you know, we all have certain to-do lists of desires, things that we really want to happen. And then it's all about spiritual strength to understand what is the timeline if they're to happen at all. And in my dream this morning, it had finally happened, the thing I've been wishing and waiting for. And it was a long dream. It was a detailed dream. So I really got a lot of time and space with the manifestation of my longing. I'll give you an example of what it would have been if I weren't keeping it a secret. You know, I'm sorry if I'm just like the ultimate teenager teacher here, but like, I also want a boyfriend. And it's been a lot closer lately. I mean, finally, post-COVID or yellow electric seed year, or me just chewing through some of my dark karma around meeting men in an internet age, I feel closer to meeting someone who might be a partner for me than I have in a year or two. So the dream would have been that I met a man and we were together, and the dream would be a long sort of lush experience of hanging out and feeling it really physically. You know how dreams can feel physical, that they aren't just, you know, an illustration of an appetite, but you actually have the lived experience in your dream and you wake up satiated in some way. So that was what this dream was for me this morning. It was like, oh, that's the lived experience of this hunger that I have that seems complicated and out of reach, and, you know, that I have to spend so much time surrendering that I may never actualize this. So I don't know what the omen is. I just know that it's a big day for me, and it was beautiful to see, you know, to read the tea leaves of my dream time on a day that has a lot of depth and is a throughway between me and my so-called higher power speaking to me in augury through my dreams. You know, what is the rest that I would want to jam in today in my relationship to you, the listener, is just like, well, there are certain days that I trust that I have something to give that I don't have to defend and explain. You know, I don't have to argue that I'm important on a blue overtone storm day because this is the day I occupy with my fate and karma for my lifetime, for better or worse. And if it's my day and you've stepped into it by listening, then I trust that whatever I had to say was significant for you as well. So it's a good day to do the kind of big picture overlay speaking to this idea of not just our relationship to the ascended Maya and where I feel like they live as an actual entity of some, you know, collective spirit out in space. Again, using that loosely, just letting that be a guide rail for how I feel that the Maya are available for us when we plug into their calendar and their magic. But also just to share how I'm beginning to reconcile the pain of witnessing, I guess it's a physical pain and fear and a sense of wanting to protect. You know, I'm just always talking about the little animals and the forest fires in my mind, but wanting to protect the species that are already being taken down by climate crisis. Like, okay, reality for me, baseline, thing I learned following this calendar early on and have never lost it, is that, you know, sometimes enlightenment is the great white light of being released from a physical body. You know, like the New Age movement talks about, or in the Christian movement talks about, you know, how we could all be released from this pain. Maybe the Christian movement is most accurate, where they seem to be talking about an exodus from earth, you know, being led by Christ to an afterlife that is splendid. I think that's the crux of what I also believe about where we are culturally and historically, is that we're not going to change this planet and make it a vision of love, but that exists in the stars, and that is where we're imminently headed. Happy Blue Overtone Storm. I'm Lisa Starr. I am another yourself, and in my end we say, in my country.